Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom dwujęzyczny. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu.
Task 1. Read the instructions and the task carefully.
Speaker A.
My mother and I were travelling on Highway 54 northbound when we saw one bright orange sphere turn into two, then three, and then four in a horizontal line. Then they blinked off one by one, then blinked back on again, and then off again. The spheres were to the left of our vehicle and seemed to be suspended pretty low and looked large up in the sky. Then we saw one orange sphere flying at a higher altitude and at a much higher rate of speed, followed by an airplane flying at a much slower speed. The sphere approached the west horizon, blinked and went out of sight. The plane pursued it until that moment and flew in circles after the sphere disappeared. I was pretty sure they were spaceships and not something made by our military.
Speaker B. I have a window that faces out towards the north. I always look at the sky, and at different times over the last few weeks, I've seen strange lights over the airspace where planes come into Reno Airport. This time the light was way lower than the stars in the sky. As I watched this and really focused on it, I realized that the object was spinning. I got the feeling that it was watching something, as it seemed to move very slowly in a sweeping pattern. I watched it do a few sweeps of the area, and after about 10 minutes, it just stopped flashing. I wish I had woken up my wife so she could have watched it with me. It was incredible. Speaker C.
I was driving along the motorway one day when I noticed 6 orange lights moving in formation in the sky just off the side of the highway. They appeared to be gliding at a slow rate. My hubby and I observed these lights for approximately 5 minutes or more. Several other cars pulled over on the side of the highway in that area as well. The lights faded out of sight one at a time, beginning with the one at the tip of the V-shaped formation. I was able to take a picture with my cell phone shortly before the lights started disappearing. It was such an amazing sight that we nearly missed our flight. I don't think the check-in staff would have believed that we saw unidentified flying objects. Listen to the recording once again.
Speaker A.
My mother and I were travelling on Highway 54 northbound when we saw one bright orange sphere turn into two, then three, and then four in a horizontal line. Then they blinked off one by one, then blinked back on again, and then off again. The spheres were to the left of our vehicle and seemed to be suspended pretty low and looked large up in the sky. Then we saw one orange sphere flying at a higher altitude and at a much higher rate of speed, followed by an airplane flying at a much slower speed. The sphere approached the west horizon, blinked and went out of sight. The plane pursued it until that moment and flew in circles after the sphere disappeared. I was pretty sure they were spaceships and not something made by our military.
Speaker B. I have a window that faces out towards the north. I always look at the sky, and at different times over the last few weeks, I've seen strange lights over the airspace where planes come into Reno Airport. This time the light was way lower than the stars in the sky. As I watched this and really focused on it, I realized that the object was spinning. I got the feeling that it was watching something, as it seemed to move very slowly in a sweeping pattern. I watched it do a few sweeps of the area, and after about 10 minutes, it just stopped flashing. I wish I had woken up my wife so she could have watched it with me. It was incredible. Speaker C.
I was driving along the motorway one day when I noticed 6 orange lights moving in formation in the sky just off the side of the highway. They appeared to be gliding at a slow rate. My hubby and I observed these lights for approximately 5 minutes or more. Several other cars pulled over on the side of the highway in that area as well. The lights faded out of sight one at a time, beginning with the one at the tip of the V-shaped formation. I was able to take a picture with my cell phone shortly before the light started disappearing. It was such an amazing sight that we nearly missed our flight. I don't think the check-in staff would have believed that we saw unidentified flying objects. Task 2. Read the instructions and the questions for text 1 carefully. Listen to the recording for text 1.
My first busking experience took place in early 2003. I was in the midst of an adventure across Australia with my then boyfriend, and we had little care for anything apart from causing mischief from coast to coast. Due to our mutual conviction that we were the chosen ones being guided by the forces of the universe, we found ourselves utterly lost, broke and starving in Byron with no place to live and no money for food or accommodation. And so it came to be that I was forced to set up with my lucky hat and guitar on the main street and busk for the first time in my life. So I positioned myself on the sidewalk outside the bank and swallowed a few gulps of pure fear before beginning the first song with sweaty, shaking fingers. An interesting and surprising thing happened after I had completed my first song. I was approached by a dark-skinned man with a braided ponytail and a British accent. He said he was holding auditions for instrumentalists for a house band at a club. He complimented my guitar playing and encouraged me to go and audition for it. I knew I wasn't going to be auditioning for any house band anywhere, but his encouragement and compliments achieved something far more wondrous. The rock of nerves inside my stomach vanished. During our conversation, I relaxed and started to feel comfortable playing there in the morning sunlight with my glitter guitar in full view of all who passed by. At one point, a strange-looking woman sneaked up on me, bent down, and swiped $2 without missing a beat. I was seething with rage. She was obviously better off than me. "You'll see, you'll pay for it," I thought, watching with the dark glare as she disappeared from view. Despite being robbed, I began to really enjoy myself sitting there playing my guitar in the sun, having friendly folk drop coins into my lucky hat and receiving smiles from passers-by. I felt fantastic as I walked back to the car. I had faced and conquered my fear, and the feeling of achievement was unlike anything I had previously known. Aside from being able to afford food on that day, my first busking experience was a personal lesson in facing fear. The prospect of playing music in public had terrified me for years, but once I did it, I realised it wasn't that bad. In fact, it was quite enjoyable.
Listen to the recording once again.
My first busking experience took place in early 2003. I was in the midst of an adventure across Australia with my then boyfriend, and we had little care for anything apart from causing mischief from coast to coast. Due to our mutual conviction that we were the chosen ones being guided by the forces of the universe, we found ourselves utterly lost, broke and starving in Byron with no place to live and no money for food or accommodation. And so it came to be that I was forced to set up with my lucky hat and guitar on the main street and busk for the first time in my life. So I positioned myself on the sidewalk outside the bank and swallowed a few gulps of pure fear before beginning the first song with sweaty, shaking fingers. An interesting and surprising thing happened after I had completed my first song. I was approached by a dark-skinned man with a braided ponytail and a British accent. He said he was holding auditions for instrumentalists for a house band at a club. He complimented my guitar playing and encouraged me to go and audition for it. I knew I wasn't going to be auditioning for any house band anywhere, but his encouragement and compliments achieved something far more wondrous. The rock of nerves inside my stomach vanished. During our conversation, I relaxed and started to feel comfortable playing there in the morning sunlight with my glitter guitar in full view of all who passed by. At one point, a strange-looking woman sneaked up on me, bent down, and swiped $2 without missing a beat. I was seething with rage. She was obviously better off than me. "You'll see, you'll pay for it," I thought, watching with the dark glare as she disappeared from view. Despite being robbed, I began to really enjoy myself sitting there playing my guitar in the sun, having friendly folk drop coins into my lucky hat and receiving smiles from passers-by. I felt fantastic as I walked back to the car. I had faced and conquered my fear, and the feeling of achievement was unlike anything I had previously known. Aside from being able to afford food on that day, my first busking experience was a personal lesson in facing fear. The prospect of playing music in public had terrified me for years, but once I did it, I realised it wasn't that bad. In fact, it was quite enjoyable.
Read the questions for text 2. Listen to the recording for text 2.
Linda Fleur, age 29, received Bachelor of Science degrees in two different fields. The first one, in marine biology, came from a small private school, while the second one, a BSc in environmental studies, was from a state university. She agreed to talk to us about her experiences. Your first degree was from a small private university in a remote area, and the second one was from a very large state university. How would you compare your two studying experiences?
The first degree, that is marine biology, was much more theoretical, and even when we did some fieldwork, it was mostly for the sole benefit of the university department. We did have a research trip once to the freshwater springs system of Florida to study alligators there, but it was more of an excuse to take a trip to Florida on the department's money, really. My second degree, the one in environmental studies, was much more hands-on. I learned about ecosystems mainly by exploring environments. We just went to a particular area for a week or so, and we had to make a record of every animal or plant we identified there. And this fieldwork was strictly correlated both to our interests and the courses we were required to take at university. And another advantage was that the department interference was limited to the necessary minimum. Within our research area, we were free to choose whatever topic we wanted.
And what are the differences between the two schools when it comes to job opportunities?
Well, first and foremost, I was able to get letters of recommendation from the state university, a very useful thing for a graduate and highly sought by prospective employers. The private school was extremely unresponsive and unprofessional, even with their letters. Also, as the state school is local, I have the continued opportunity to interact with some of my professors. I have run into a number of them again in my work, and through them I've managed to make useful employment contacts. I'm lucky to have a job in my field, and I must admit that doing a degree at the state school was a great advantage. I know graduates from my first private school who are still trying to get jobs in their fields. Several others are just doing temporary jobs without any chance of a real career. Just to quote one example, I have a friend who had a job at first where she had a mandatory unpaid 6-month vacation. Then she had a part-time job in her field for a few years and is only now finally employed full-time, but not doing what she'd studied.
Thank you very much for talking to us, Linda.
Listen to the recording once again.
Linda Fleur, age 29, received Bachelor of Science degrees in two different fields. The first one, in marine biology, came from a small private school, while the second one, a BSc in environmental studies, was from a state university. She agreed to talk to us about her experiences. Your first degree was from a small private university in a remote area, and the second one was from a very large state university. How would you compare your two studying experiences?
The first degree, that is marine biology, was much more theoretical, and even when we did some fieldwork, it was mostly for the sole benefit of the university department. We did have a research trip once to the freshwater springs system of Florida to study alligators there, but it was more of an excuse to take a trip to Florida on the department's money, really. My second degree, the one in environmental studies, was much more hands-on. I learned about ecosystems mainly by exploring environments. We just went to a particular area for a week or so, and we had to make a record of every animal or plant we identified there. And this fieldwork was strictly correlated both to our interests and the courses we were required to take at university. And another advantage was that the department interference was limited to the necessary minimum. Within our research area, we were free to choose whatever topic we wanted.
And what are the differences between the two schools when it comes to job opportunities?
Well, first and foremost, I was able to get letters of recommendation from the state university, a very useful thing for a graduate and highly sought by prospective employers. The private school was extremely unresponsive and unprofessional, even with their letters. Also, as the state school is local, I have the continued opportunity to interact with some of my professors. I have run into a number of them again in my work, and through them I've managed to make useful employment contacts. I'm lucky to have a job in my field, and I must admit that doing a degree at the state school was a great advantage. I know graduates from my first private school who are still trying to get jobs in their fields. Several others are just doing temporary jobs without any chance of a real career. Just to quote one example, I have a friend who had a job at first where she had a mandatory unpaid 6-month vacation. Then she had a part-time job in her field for a few years and is only now finally employed full-time, but not doing what she'd studied.
Thank you very much for talking to us, Linda.
Task 3. Read the instructions and the task carefully.
It's pretty common in America to give children cheese sticks in their lunchboxes, but from my point of view, it's not eco-friendly. Each piece of mozzarella or cheddar stick is individually wrapped, like a high-end truffle, and every day, thousands of those little pieces of plastic wrap are thrown into the trash. Yet, there's some hope for a change. Researchers from the US have developed a special type of wrapping. This is a thin layer of film made from a milk protein that can be eaten with the cheese. It wouldn't be the first wrapper we can eat, but this would be more beneficial to health than the existing edible plastic, where the main component is starch, not protein. The key element in the innovative packaging is casein, which is a group of milk proteins with high nutritional value. It is just slightly soluble in water, and that made researchers believe it might be suitable for use in making a film coating. Also, if this invention is given the go-ahead, adding vitamins or minerals to the film would be possible. And since dry milk could be used to create the film, farmers would be able to put their surplus milk powder to use. Today, when dairy farms are producing too much milk, it's dried to milk powder which is stored for years, and sometimes even thrown away as there is little demand for it. The casein film has been found to be significantly more effective at blocking oxygen than ordinary plastic wrap, so it is even better at preventing food from going off. Yet using the new film wouldn't mean that all packaging would be eliminated. Cheese and other dairy products would still need to be covered in some way to keep the food from getting dirty. The research team have now started working on different versions of the casein film. One of them might be suitable for a product you dissolve in water. In the future, it could be used to contain instant coffee or soup. You could just drop a casein packet of ingredients into water where everything would dissolve. But some food companies might actually prefer a spray version of the product. One possible use of this would be to spray the protein film on breakfast cereal, which nowadays is generally coated with sugar to keep it crunchy. Since more and more customers are looking for sugar-free options, the new spray coating might be a breakthrough.
Listen to the recording once again.
It's pretty common in America to give children cheese sticks in their lunchboxes, but from my point of view, it's not eco-friendly. Each piece of mozzarella or cheddar stick is individually wrapped, like a high-end truffle, and every day, thousands of those little pieces of plastic wrap are thrown into the trash. Yet, there's some hope for a change. Researchers from the US have developed a special type of wrapping. This is a thin layer of film made from a milk protein that can be eaten with the cheese. It wouldn't be the first wrapper we can eat, but this would be more beneficial to health than the existing edible plastic, where the main component is starch, not protein. The key element in the innovative packaging is casein, which is a group of milk proteins with high nutritional value. It is just slightly soluble in water, and that made researchers believe it might be suitable for use in making a film coating. Also, if this invention is given the go-ahead, adding vitamins or minerals to the film would be possible. And since dry milk could be used to create the film, farmers would be able to put their surplus milk powder to use. Today, when dairy farms are producing too much milk, it's dried to milk powder, which is stored for years, and sometimes even thrown away as there is little demand for it. The casein film has been found to be significantly more effective at blocking oxygen than ordinary plastic wrap, so it is even better at preventing food from going off. Yet using the new film wouldn't mean that all packaging would be eliminated. Cheese and other dairy products would still need to be covered in some way to keep the food from getting dirty. The research team have now started working on different versions of the casein film. One of them might be suitable for a product you dissolve in water. In the future, it could be used to contain instant coffee or soup. You could just drop a casein packet of ingredients into water, where everything would dissolve. But some food companies might actually prefer a spray version of the product. One possible use of this would be to spray the protein film on breakfast cereal, which nowadays is generally coated with sugar to keep it crunchy. Since more and more customers are looking for sugar-free options, the new spray coating might be a breakthrough.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.